The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
the beast.
We're told in the Book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan!
Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
They're here.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the soggy heartland of America, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to our humble bunker, bigger bunker, actually.
Yes.
It's 30% bigger, and the question is, will we be 30%
Well, that's the challenge before us as we record this on September the 2nd of 2012.
We have switched our bedroom with our bunker.
That's right.
Because the bunker was kind of small and we only sleep in the bedroom, so this is the more important room.
That's right. And now we have an ensuite for the...
That's pretty ensuite.
That's right. So, you know, if the show goes long, we can just step into the next room.
while
the other one covers, you know.
Or if it goes wrong,
yeah,
we can step into the next room.
Which is how
I felt actually the last few days.
Well, I'm thankful that you're feeling much better today.
Well, thank you very much, honey, and I'm glad that. I'm praying that it isn't contagious. Whatever I had, I wondered if it was caused by the ice cream there for a while, and I won't name the brand, but. Apparently not, because I ate that same ice cream yesterday, and I'm fine today. So I don't know.
That's a good thing.
I think it was the stress of switching the rooms. It just
it could be
was more than I could take.
Yeah. So yeah. Essentially, we just flip flopped the two bedrooms that we've got upstairs here in the split level bunker.
And, Sam doesn't like it at all.
No, he's just this is totally
upset.
Wrong. We always do shows in the other room. This is not right.
Exactly. Look. I can put up with moving from house to house, but moving constantly from room to room, when we first got here, it was set up in the big family room downstairs. Then you moved it into the little bedroom downstairs. Then you moved it into the second bedroom upstairs. Now you've moved it into your bedroom.
And next we'll be taking over the living room, family room combination out for
actually, that would be really handy
because
could roll.
Yeah, that's right. It's on the hard
surface. That has
hard
a hard,
surface.
Hard
yeah.
floor.
Yeah. That'd be
really cool.
You
can't roll
on
carpet.
We could race, actually, on these chairs.
Sam can roll on carpet.
Well, as the world races toward its final destination, we're here to keep tabs on it all.
Those are good movies, by the way.
We're here to keep tabs on it all. This is
hey, what's going on with Jupiter? Jupiter is racing till it's talking to us.
Yeah, that was kind of a weird story, and I would have flagged it if I'd known that you were going to talk about it.
I threw you did. Didn't I?
Scientists have discovered some radio signals coming from Jupiter that they didn't expect. They were tracking signals from Saturn, and apparently in trying to calibrate, if I understand the story, essentially they stumbled onto a new signal that was...
They threw a lot of big numbers in there.
Apparently some
kind of calibration language and
yeah,
when we woke up, we didn't care anymore.
A lot of bodies in space, the Earth and the stars and planets, will generate radio frequencies. Generally, it's because of the electromagnetic – it's because of the EMF fields that surround the planets. And, you know, you people who are listening to science, who are actually scientists and actually understand this, plug your ears because I know I'm butchering this.
The TARDIS.
Yeah. But essentially, they found a new signal that they hadn't expected before because it's not directly related to the rotation of Jupiter or
I'm
the movement
you,
of
it's the TARDIS.
The moon Io.
You ever notice that the TARDIS is sort of shaped like those things in 2001?
The monoliths?
Yes, sort of.
It still looks like a phone box.
Only shorter, squatter, and blue.
and a little more, you know, and bigger on the inside.
Well,
yeah, this is the.
And they're bigger on the inside, the monoliths are.
Really? Now, I've not read the novels. I've only seen the movies. Arthur C. Clarke was an interesting fellow. Anyway, and this is opening weekend for the new season of Doctor Who, by the way, in the UK and here
in
the
I'm
US.
Not so sure that that's a coincidence that it's the day after International Bacon Day. Make of that what you will.
I'm sure there's some connection there somehow, but many things going on in the trying to transition this into something.
I know, and I'm trying to stall as long as I can to make sure that I've got internet connections on my web pages.
Oh, okay, all right, yeah, and this may have something to do with all the rain we've had here in Central Illinois.
Know. Could be
Remnants of Hurricane Isaac. Slowly moved through Missouri, Illinois. It's off in Indiana and Ohio someplace now as we record this in the late afternoon of Sunday, September 2nd. And there were some locally heavy areas of locally heavy rainfall. Mm-hmm.
Over 5 inches in the last few days.
Right. The storm really came through central Illinois beginning Friday evening. And since Friday night, some areas in central Illinois as far north as Peoria have received up to 5 3/4 inches of rain. Here in Charleston, we're closer to about 3, 3.5. But considering that we only had 0.3 inches the entire month of July, mm-hmm. and not much more than that in August, I think we might have gotten about 1.5 inches in August. And all of it
did was, we get that much in August?
Well, because we had those toward the third week in August, we had rain 3 days out of 5. Now, none of them was really heavy, but considering that we'd only seen, you know, less than 3/8 inch in the entire month of July, and average
and
for
now
our area
it's like
in July,
walking out into a steam bath.
It is. Like as it was in the days of Noah before, you know, the rains came up and the earth was
yes,
just sort of watered
exactly.
by a mist. That's sort of
well,
what it's like right
that's
now.
That's what it's like in our backyard.
But we essentially received an entire month's worth of rain here in the last 48 hours or so. Because average for July and August in this part of Illinois is about 3.5 inches a month. And again, we got about 0.3 inches in July. And corn crop ruined. In fact, I was talking to a customer Thursday. They do some repair on agricultural equipment. And they said a farmer had just come in. He'd harvested about 1,000 acres and had come in with 2,500 bushels of corn. That's 2.5 bushels per acre. A normal year here in Illinois, you get 200 anywhere from 150 to 225, I'm told. So, you know, pretty bad. Now, the farmers have crop insurance, and that will help some. But I've talked to one fellow who said he's basically not going to cover the cost of planting and the fuel that it took to put the crop in and get the crop back out. So kind of a rough year here. Mm-hmm. But we can use the rain here. It's just sad that so many folks down in and around New Orleans and in southern Louisiana, I've had to deal with the flooding that they've had. What is it? Location down there where the flood wall was breached, and because they fell in between two flood walls that were supposed to keep the rivers out, and all the water rushed in between the flood
was
walls.
Was it Braithwaite?
Braithwaite, Louisiana, where only the peaks of the houses were showing above the water.
Oh, the footage of that area—it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, when you build in an area close to the ocean, sadly, these things can sometimes happen, especially when you're building in areas that are below sea level.
You know, I'm glad you said that word build, because this morning our pastor's sermon was on Psalm 127.
Right.
That starts out, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have it in front of me, but unless the Lord build a house,
the laborer works in vain.
Exactly.
Yeah, and of course, that was timely because here in the United States, this is our annual Labor Day holiday weekend, which is tomorrow, September 3rd, first Monday in September. And so it was timely in that regard, but it was a well-delivered sermon.
That's a really interesting psalm, actually,
yeah. Yeah, because it also says, unless the Lord protects the city, the watchman watches in vain.
Yes, which really struck me because, you know, many of us in the alternet, so to speak, many of us who do radio shows like this, internet radio shows mm-hmm. like this, we consider ourselves watchmen and watch women, mm-hmm. in my case, and the case of many of the ladies out there, who are trying very hard to see what's going on in the world and decipher how that translates into the spiritual realm, because we do know that the events in the spiritual world affect our world directly and sometimes indirectly, and so you have to kind of figure out what's going on. That's to me, that's mm-hmm. what being a watchman, you know, stands for. You stand on the wall mm-hmm. and you keep watch everywhere, and if you see something that looks suspicious, you report it, because if you do not, then if something happens and it turns out to be a really bad thing coming at you, mm-hmm. then whatever happens to the people, you're liable for.
That's right. But again, as and I've got the ESV open here, unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain.
Mm-hmm. I love the part where it talks about how his beloved sleeps.
Yeah. It's, this is Psalm 127, by the way, which was the text that Pastor used this morning. It is in vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So very pertinent verse as we think about labor and what it has contributed to our society and the protections that American workers and many in Western societies enjoy today.
And just in case you don't have your Bible in front of you right now, that Psalm 127, a song of ascents, is by Solomon.
Mm-hmm.
So when he speaks of his beloved, refer that to the Song of Solomon, where you see the story of how Christ loves the church, his beloved.
Mm-hmm.
So when I see something like in that, and that's why that really struck me about the watchman, you know, needing to watching in vain if the Lord isn't part of it, but also that his beloved sleeps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you get to rest. Those of us who I'm a worrywart sometimes. I'm constantly. Sam's coming back.
Yeah.
Saying, they're really
right,
doing
I guess
a show.
Do a show here. All right, I guess I'll go over.
They were
and get
lying
in the
about
bed.
It. She was on the phone with Aunt Ann for a lot. Many of us, I know myself included, and I suspect that many of you go through the same things when the days sort of, you know, the small things. What we've referred to many times as the little foxes, mm-hmm. and that's not our idea. That's a scriptural description of the day's minor things. The little, you know, worries that nip at your heels. Many times if the big thing comes along, you know, we suddenly rest in the Lord and we don't worry nearly as much. We borrow trouble before it comes along.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. and Mrs. Worry Worry is a story that I've told you about many times before. Poor Derek wants so badly to get to the news. But Mr. and Mrs. Worry Worry was a story that I read in one of the little, you know, readers when I was in grade school. And it was a story about a dad who goes downstairs to get something out of the cellar. And he looks up and there's an axe hanging in the ceiling. And he suddenly stops and he just puts his head in his hands. And the wife comes down to see what's going on. And why didn't you bring that, you know, that jar of pickles that I wanted up or whatever? And he says, look up there, see the axe hanging in the ceiling. And she says, oh, why, what's going on? He says, don't you understand that one of these days we'll have a child and the child will come down here to get a jar of pickles and that axe will drop and on his head and kill him. So she sits down with her head in her hands and the two of them are sitting there worrying and worrying. And down comes Grandpa and he says, what's going on? Where are my pickles? And they explain to him that the axe is in the ceiling, and he just reaches up and pulls it down. So, see, that's this notion of worrying for things that you shouldn't worry about.
And that's the first time I've ever heard you tell that story, by the way.
Oh, I've told it before.
Not to me.
Watch somebody write in and go, Derek, on show
refer
number.
To she. It you know what, you may have, and I was probably looking for something on the web while you were telling the story.
Because you were actually looking at me and listening this time with these little, oh, isn't she cute when she wanders off? I'll go get her medicine while she's saying these things.
But you make a good point. I mean, we borrow trouble, and maybe it's because the interest paid on those investments in worry are so, you know, so great. I mean, they promise such great dividends. But Scripture tells us not to worry because it doesn't add a single day or single hour to our life. You know, tomorrow is enough trouble on its own. Let's not, you know.
No, and I'm classic. You could tell them right now. You know, you go somewhere and I say, well, honey, will you check in them and let me know where you are?
If somebody ever, and
honey, you could get out there and somebody could knock you in the head.
That's true. The axe falls out of the roof of the car.
Exactly.
And there we are. Yeah. And the International Security Agency looks at our log of texts back and forth. It's like all coming from one direction. Okay, I'm in Olney now.
Okay.
Now I'm in Salem.
Now I'm fine. Yeah. I really appreciate that. Just so you know, I do appreciate your doing that.
And I'm not making
because
fun of you for that.
There have been times when you haven't sent a text for a while and I've thought, I guess he got there. He's probably having lunch with so-and-so. I'll give him some time before I call the cops on him. At least I know the last time I heard from him, he was in Salem. What are you looking at?
It's just kind of
an axe in the ceiling.
No. It's I just looked
there's
up.
There's an axe in the ceiling. Where'd they get this?
A couple of years ago, about a year and a half ago, before you moved, I got these progressive lenses, which you know is like.
It's better than Geico.
Yeah, I wanted the conservative lenses, but they were all out, so I had to go for the progressive lenses. Which is basically bifocals, but there's no line. So, you know, I want to read. I have to look through the bottom of the glasses. When I drive, I look through the top of the lenses. And I just looked up, and because of the way, the properties of these lenses, the ceiling fan here in the bunker, as it's going, is casting these shadows against the textured ceiling. Okay. And as the blades rotate and obscures the light in the light fixture, the shadows move and it makes it look like the roof, the ceiling in here is vibrating back and forth like one of those paint mixer things at the hardware store. It's bizarre.
Nurse!
Oh,
since we started doing this show at the nursing home, it's been really different.
Yeah. That day's coming.
I know it is. I do know it is.
Oh,
we're
going
to have to get a room where they'll let us actually have our
stuff
in here.
Well. Things happening in the news. There are things to talk about, believe it or not.
And one of them we learned about just before we came to press.
Yeah, and that is the passing of Sun Myung Moon, the founder of the Unification Church, at the age of, 93? He was 92, rather.
My question is, when did he actually die? Because that's the kind of news that people, sometimes those in the inner circle will sort of sit on that. For what, make sure that it gets out in exactly the way they want it to.
That's a good question to ask. And it says it died Monday, but Korea is 14 hours ahead of where we are here. And as we record this at just ahead of 6 p.m. local time, that would make it about 8 a.m. Local time in Korea. So it could well be Monday there. I mean, in other words, this may be relatively new news and not something that happened, you know, this past Monday. But that was a good thing to ask because, the reputation that he had, I think, for most people, when you mentioned the Moonies, and he was not as high profile in recent years as he had been.
That creaking is my chair, by the way. Not my bones.
My lower back. He had a reputation in the 70s and 80s as being a real nut job because he would have these mass wedding ceremonies where he would marry thousands of followers who basically were paired off by the church. Now that's sort of the Scientologist bailiwick, but that's another story.
Or Putin.
But he really had a lot of political clout. And more so, I think, than people realized. The Unification Church is the owner of the Washington Times newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
The owner of vast tracts of land in various parts of the world, connections to...
Doesn't he own a huge portion of the aquifer down in South America?
Guarani Aquifer in Paraguay, and land that apparently... there were stories of a couple of years ago, and we talked about this, that a joint property supposedly purchased by George W. Bush.
Yeah.
Now, that's never been confirmed by the Bush family, but they're... About the time those stories came out, his two daughters were down in Paraguay for something, and it's speculated, this is speculation, that they were there to oversee some of the legal matters that had to be taken care of, because obviously at that point in time, President Bush would not have been able to do such a thing without, you know, all of the world's media paying attention. But that is known, that he owns land down there on top of the Guarani Aquifer, which is one of the world's largest known sources of fresh water. So he died Monday, and this would be September 3rd of 2012 at a hospital owned by the Unification Church northeast of Seoul. Now, he was hospitalized about 2 weeks ago with pneumonia, and the church, according to this report, will likely hold a 13-day mourning ceremony, mourning period, and start accepting mourners at the Unification Church's religious center on Wednesday.
I wonder why they chose 13 days.
Don't know.
I assume it's an important number in their church.
Could be, or could be just a Korean custom. Don't know. The
we
church
can
claims
ask Joe Jordan.
Yeah, Joe may know. Joe is posted in Korea right now, so he may.
We'll see if we can find out a little.
Send him an email and ask him about that.
Yeah.
But the church claims 3 million members worldwide, including 100,000 here in the United States. Ex-members and critics say the figure is no more than 100,000 members worldwide. Church's holdings include the Washington Times newspaper, the New Yorker Hotel, Connecticut's Bridgeport University. I did not know that. And a seafood distribution firm that supplies sushi to Japanese restaurants across the U.S. Owns a ski resort, a professional football team, and other businesses in South Korea. And by football, I presume they mean soccer for us Americans.
Yeah, I would think so. At one time, he was spearheading a project to supposedly build a bridge across the Bering Straits.
Yeah, he was. There was talk about that. And the church also owns a luxury hotel in North Korea and jointly operates a North Korean automaker. So he had claimed
they make cars in North Korea.
Presumably,
I guess I'm just surprised by that.
Yeah, presumably, Moon had claimed to be the Messiah.
Yes.
Yeah, and he developed, and this is really odd. There was that weird coronation ceremony that took place with members of the United States Congress a couple of years
ago? Well, yes, and we should link to that picture if it's still available on the internet.
I'm going to look this up here. And that was really weird because the members of Congress who were involved in this really had to backtrack
and well-known members of Congress.
Yeah, really had to explain their participation in it. Let's see. John Gorenfeld was a fellow who was writing. He had a website for a while called IApproveThisMessiah.com, in which he tracked the activities of the Unification Church, and he shut that down a couple of years ago, which is too bad. I'm trying to find the article here. I think it was 2004.
Well, you continue on, and I'll look for that while you you had all these things lined up, and I totally got you off. And
yeah, this was 2004. Congressman Danny Davis, Democrat from our great state of Illinois, participated in the coronation of Sun Myung Moon. United Press International. That was the other thing I forgot that they owned. Washington Times and UPI is also a subsidiary of the Unification Church. And he was involved in the Korea Gate scandal back in the late 70s. He served some time. Davis
March 23rd,
wore, Davis wore white gloves, read Moon's Crown of Glory poem, and carried a golden crown that was placed on Moon's head after Moon proclaimed himself the Messiah, the King of Peace, and Returning Lord. And again, this was from June of 2004,
right,
so about 8 years
event,
ago. Yeah.
The event took place on March 23rd. Sorry, I keep moving this because I don't quite hear in my headphones as much. There you go. I just want to make sure.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, we were kind of overdriving the.
We were.
Yeah.
Do I have an overdriving license? March 23rd ceremony in the Dirksen Senate Office Building.
Yeah.
Davis wore white gloves.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you say. Korean-born businessman said he was sent to Earth to save the world's 6 billion people. Emperors, kings, and presidents have declared to all heaven and earth that Reverend Sun Myung Moon is none other than humanity's savior.
Mm-hmm.
I see what you're saying.
Yep. And let's see, who else was there? Congressman Walter Fauntroy presided at the event. He represented at that time, anyway, the District of Columbia. Welcoming letter from then House Speaker Denny Hastert of Illinois. Congressional Black Caucus Chairman Elijah Cummings of Maryland was there. Praised Moon for always standing up for what is right. Utah State Senator Howard Stevenson, Republican, was there. And what else?
Roscoe G. Bartlett.
Roscoe Bartlett, yeah. So it was a really bizarre ceremony, and there's a picture of Moon wearing this crown and a cape, and he and his wife both standing there like a king and queen. And again, the self-proclaimed Messiah, dead at the age of 92, September 3rd, 2012. And anyone who proclaims himself the Messiah, and sadly, there are media outlets that are reporting his Unification Church as Bible-based.
Whose Bible?
It's not.
Bible simply means book.
Any translation that you or I are familiar with, anyone who proclaims himself to be the Messiah is not a true follower of Jesus Christ.
He's either deceived. A loon or a devil.
And sadly, there are hundreds of thousands of people who have been deceived by this man. And he, you know, barring some change at the end of which we are not aware, and we don't know the state of his heart at the time of his passing. So
no.
It is not on us to pass judgment. Just we note what actions he participated in just pray that he came to know the real Jesus Christ before the end.
Yeah. So, you never know.
Yeah. Yeah, we were listening to a radio this morning, and a pastor was preaching on, the day we get to heaven, and they're shocked at all the people who we find there that we didn't expect, and that many of them will likely be just as surprised as see us. So,
I like the old,
and I think we need to keep that in mind.
Shh, as we walk along, don't make any noise as we go past this door. That's where all the Baptists are, and they think they're the only ones
here. That's right.
I grew up Baptist. I can tell that joke.
Yep. So, the passing of Reverend Moon, in the Middle East, there's still more turmoil, as if there ever is not turmoil in the Middle East.
You know, the Lord promised to make Israel a cup of trembling, and I think in many ways.
Yeah. That is what's happening. And things have been roiling there since the days of King Saul and before. This is an article that appeared just a couple of days ago in the Foreign Policy Journal, which is the official publication of the Council on Foreign Relations. So it carries some weight there, as the Council on Foreign Relations has essentially a cartel, a monopoly on American foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
They're not all in agreement with one another. It's not a monolithic block where everybody is, moving in lockstep, Imhotep. But when they publish stuff in their magazine, you pay attention to it. And we subscribed to it for a while, and frankly, it's so mind-numbingly dull that...
And they bank on that.
Yeah, is it? Nobody pays attention, except for the people who are...
Look, I want this article to be really mind-numbingly dull, but put some information in there that's critical.
So we can say,
We told you.
The plans have been on file.
On file, at the planning office, these years.
This is an article by Franklin Lamb, and he says that he is reporting on a new analysis of the situation in the Middle East by U.S. intelligence that indicates that the United States government is preparing for what he calls a post-Israel Middle East.
The United States is preparing for a post-Israel Middle East.
Yeah. There's a paper with that title, in fact, Preparing for a Post-Israel Middle East, which is an 82-page analysis that concludes that America's national interest is fundamentally at odds with that of Zionist Israel. The authors, which include representatives of most of the intelligence services in the United States, they conclude that Israel is currently the greatest threat to U.S. national interests because its nature and actions, and I'm quoting from the article now, prevent normal U.S. relations with Arab and Muslim countries and, to a growing degree, the wider international community. This study was commissioned by the U.S. intelligence community, comprising 16 American intelligence agencies with an annual budget in excess of $70 billion, includes the Departments of the Navy, Army, Air Force, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, Defense Intelligence Agency, Departments of Energy, Homeland Security, State, Treasury, the Drug Enforcement Agency, Federal Bureau of Investigation, National Security Agency, National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, National Reconnaissance Agency, and, of course, last but not least, the Central Intelligence Agency.
They're always the last.
The findings include these bullet points. Israel, given its current brutal occupation, and these are the words in the study, brutal occupation and belligerence cannot be salvaged any more than apartheid South Africa could be when as late as 1987, Israel was the only Western nation that upheld diplomatic ties with South Africa, was the last country to join the international boycott campaign before the South African apartheid regime collapsed. The Israeli leadership, with its increasing support of 700,000 settlers in the occupied West Bank, is increasingly out of touch with the political, military, and economic realities of the Middle East. That the post-Labor government Likud coalition is deeply complicit with and influenced by the settlers' political and financial power, and will increasingly face domestic civil strife, which the U.S. government should not associate itself with. That the Arab Spring and Islamic Awakening has to a major degree freed a large majority of the 1.2 billion Arab and Muslims to pursue what an overwhelming majority believes the illegitimate, immoral, and unsustainable European occupation of Palestine and its indigenous population. In other words, now that Gaddafi is gone and Mubarak is gone, that these Arabs now are free to determine their own destinies. They're free to go after Israel the way they wanted to all along. And this goes on. They also reference in this an analysis from the U.S. intelligence services, gross Israeli interference in the internal affairs of the United States through spying and illegal U.S. arms transfers. This includes supporting more than 60 front organizations and approximately 7,500 U.S. officials who do Israel's bidding. That the U.S. government is no longer the financial resources or public support to continue funding Israel. And it goes on, and I'll link to this article at the Foreign Policy Journal, but it is kind of disturbing that this is the product of an interagency report from America's intelligence services. In a sense, it kind of brings to the fore and almost formalizes what researchers like John Loftus, wrote about years ago in his book, The Secret War Against the Jews, in that while the American government and elements within the American government were openly friendly and supportive of Israel, that behind the scenes, especially within the intelligence services, there was a collaboration and a cooperation with the Saudis in particular, but other elements out of the Middle East that are not friendly to Israel. And, you know, I have heard people reference that book for years. I really need to get a copy of that, The Secret War Against the Jews.
Oh.
I have not read it. I've just heard Loftus talk about it. And in the context of America's and England's intelligence services assistance given to Nazis escaping Germany on the rat lines, and how they basically transplanted the radical Islamic movement that the Nazis created during World War II. From Egypt into Saudi Arabia. When Nasser took over Egypt, he basically wanted the Muslim Brotherhood out, and of course now they're back 60 years later. But we basically helped to get those guys set up in a new place in Saudi Arabia. I hope I'm summarizing his research correctly, but that was the gist of it. That behind the scenes, we are not as friendly to Israel as our politicians say we are. So
there's a parallel story that I think is important to bring up here. The story where General Dempsey has been on the record. He's been making the rounds for some reason the last few days, and he has gone on the record. He's quoted as saying that he would not want to be complicit in an Israeli attack on Iran. And there is a gentleman, Chemi Shalev, who has taken this to mean that Dempsey wants to goad Israel into attacking Iran. This comes at a time when the Obama administration is pulling back drastically on their support of Israel, and even though they deny it. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that the October joint exercise that we've had scheduled and actually canceled, postponed. It was supposed to take place this past spring, and instead in January it was announced that it would not take place until October. If I'm to understand it correctly, it essentially rehearses an attack on Iran. And originally I think we'd had about 5,000 soldiers committed to it, and at least two Aegis ships, mm-hmm. and many other components to this exercise. Now, there's only one Aegis ship, if that, and only 1,500 of our soldiers will be participating along with Israel. But at the same time, Ahmadinejad has announced that Iran will be having its own exercises at the same time, mm-hmm. and that they will be rehearsing a response to an attack by Israel.
It's like that episode of The Simpsons where Bart and Lisa are saying, I'm just going to walk along here swinging my fists around in an arc, and if you happen to get in the way, I can't be responsible for what happens, you know, that kind of thing.
But here's the thing. If indeed the Western intelligence agencies, at the very least, have gotten together and said, you know, we'd be better off without Israel than goading Israel into attacking Iran. The thought might be Israel can't possibly survive if the Arab nations pull together and help Iran in responding.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? My question is, in all of these decades since Israel became a nation again in 1948, why haven't they been taken off the map? They're not very big.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of big bullies on the block. Egypt could have taken them out had they really wanted to.
One would argue that, and certainly many of those Arab nations
but
with the support
answer
of Russia.
Is it's God protecting them.
Yeah, and that was the point that I was leading to. There are people out there who say, well, it's only because the United States has supported Israel through all this time.
The only answer that makes sense, I mean, for this tiny nation.
Yeah.
To literally, for the whole Western world, and in fact, the whole world, if you want to say that, look at this itty-bitty nation and say, boy, if they were just out of the way, we'd all be so happy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's not going to, that ain't going to happen.
No, but what if when, as Jesus commands those who are living in Jerusalem at the time, when they see the abomination of desolation take place, don't even go back for your hat.
Mm-hmm.
Run.
Yeah.
When they all leave, I wonder if it's possible that the world will rejoice and say, hey, got rid of them. Now we can move in and make this place. We're going to stretch out, make this place our place now.
Yeah.
Those Jews are gone.
Well, it's not going to happen that easily, I don't think, because there are other and unpredictable elements at work in the mix here. There's a story that this has been out for a couple of days, and I don't know if we missed this last week or if this just didn't appear before this week, but this kind of sends a chill down the back of your neck when you read this. The Washington Post reported that a U.S. Navy commander. No, we did miss this last week because our Post article was published on August 21st. Vice Admiral Kevin J. Cosgrove, essentially wanted to pick a fight with Iran, provoke a fight, and his actions were exposed by an analyst, Gwyneth Todd, who lost her job. But reporter Jeff Stein of the Post, citing anonymous sources, said that Vice Admiral Cosgrove seriously planned to sail three aircraft carriers through the Straits of Hormuz without notifying Saudi Arabia or any of the other neighbor states. And he was going to do this without saying anything to Washington because he didn't want to check with the Joint Chiefs of Staff or the White House because they would say no. And this has not been a story that you think that this is something that would pop up on the mainstream media. I mean, this is like Dr. Strangelove, where General Jack D. Ripper, decides he's going to provoke a war with Russia in order to finally wipe the communists out because they're stealing their precious bodily fluids or whatever his motivation was.
That's what he claimed.
But you've got a vice admiral who apparently, according to the Washington Post, was seriously planning to provoke a fight with Iran by sailing three aircraft carriers through the Straits of Hormuz without telling anyone, even Washington, D.C. From the article, Stein writes, there was a feeling that the Navy was back on its heels in dealing with Iran, according to a Navy official prohibited from commenting in the media. There was an intention to be far more aggressive with the Iranians and a diminished concern about keeping Washington in the loop. End quote. Presumably, this guy, Vice Admiral Cosgrove, had a sense that in order to do what needs to be done, somebody with the spine to do it had to just step up and take action, and apparently was outed by this analyst. And Cosgrove, well, since we've not heard anything about a carrier group sailing into the through the Straits of Hormuz, was apparently stopped before he.
Where is he now?
Don't know.
How do you spell his name?
Cosgriff. And just doing a search to see how much attention the story got in the mainstream media here. This begs the question, of course, is Cosgrove the only one who thinks this way? Very possibly not.
Well, we're seeing more and more stories about military men and women who are not at all happy with the Obama administration.
Yes, that's very true.
And the Obama administration doesn't take that very well. And if I were commander-in-chief, I probably wouldn't take it well either. But you and I have talked about and asked each other the question, is there some special reason why we keep hearing this meme over and over again, that this notion of rogue military or former military?
Yes, yes. That is it's almost like... Well, that ex-military, and specifically angry white ex-military guys, are more of a threat to our national security than forces outside. And that there is a concern, and we keep hearing about this in the media, that there are white supremacists who are joining the military specifically to be trained in how to, kill people and break things.
Yeah.
Now, when was the story with Cosgrove?
Why was Navy advisor stripped of her career? Is that Gwyneth Todd?
Yes, that is the one.
That is at the Washington Post. Is that the one? The story you were talking about, Jeff Stein? Yeah, sorry.
No, that's the article, which was published on the 21st. This, let's see, when was this? When did this take place with Cosgrove?
Well, he arrived in 2007.
In a series of staff meetings, Cosgrove expressed his intention of sending two aircraft carriers, an amphibious helicopter assault carrier, that'd be the Stennis, I think, and five supporting warships through the Strait of Hormuz with no advance warning to Iran or even to U.S. allies in the region.
Well, the story is about six pages long.
Yeah.
And I'm getting connection errors over and over again, so I'm having trouble reading through it. Our internet has been spotty at best and the last 24 hours, and it could be because of all the rain. Strangely enough, it seems like when we get a lot of rain, that affects our, and it's not a dish, or anything like that. We have a cable, and it's buried 4 feet under the lawn, so I don't think that the rain is getting to the cable.
Yeah. And it was recently replaced. It was replaced after we moved here, so we know it's not an old cable. They had to reroute it, actually.
Yeah, and that's why it's 4 feet under.
So anyway, we'll put links to these stories here. But this is kind of this just sort of raises the question: what was Vice Admiral Cosgrove the only one in the military who feels a sense of urgency to act where this administration may not? And we're not advocating that we should go to war.
Certainly,
we pray against the idea of war. We know that prophecy tells us that war is coming. Wars and rumors of war. And so there are small conflicts all over the planet, so we're never really free from war as a species. But when you're picking a fight with a country that may already be a nuclear power, that really casts a different light on things. And it is, based on what we keep reading from sources in that region, very possible that Israel is going to go ahead and strike soon. Perhaps October is a date that I've read a couple of places. Debka has suggested October. They also suggest that the Obama administration is trying to pressure Benjamin Netanyahu's administration to hold off until after the election.
Mm-hmm. And there are also rumors, if you've read Doug Hagman's recent article, which you still haven't had a chance to read that. I'm looking at Derek.
Right.
I'm looking at you, Iowa. That his inside information, his contacts in the DHS and in the in the White House, I believe he has one there too. He seems to think, or his contacts seem to think, that there's been a go signal given for a special event to occur in October if it looks like the president will have a difficult time winning in November, with the upshot being that there would be no election.
Hmm.
Now, I don't know that that's ever occurred in our history that we have postponed the election. I can't recall one. Sorry, we're at war, and we can't have an election.
We even held an election during the Civil War.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That certainly is something that gets... Sam is grumbling down there. He said, yeah, you better not try that.
Are you doing your pirate talk?
So it would be unprecedented, even during times of war. I mean, even during World War II, World War and the Civil War, you know, elections continued. So, I would be shocked if something like that were to happen. But it certainly makes good fodder at conspiracy websites. 2007, by the way, was when this incident.
Is that when it supposedly occurred? Because I know when this...
So this story only came out within the last week or so. So this incident with Vice Admiral Cosgrove is not something that's happened in recent weeks. This is something that happened about 5 years ago under the Bush administration.
Did Gwyneth Todd just come out with this story? Or
apparently,
has someone been sitting on it until now?
I would have to read more into the story. I only saw the summary
pages long. So.
Yeah, Business Insider was where I first saw the summary of the story, and they really didn't get into much detail. And I should have, read the backstory here before, bringing this out. But the reason I bring this up now is that we are approaching what appears to be a decision time for proceeding with action against Iran, and we are not hoping for war. Or praying for war, and there are those out there who look at Christians and accuse us of pushing for this because of the threat to Israel's Israel's security. Look, Israel has got the Lord God Almighty, protecting it, and that's not to say we support everything the nation state of Israel does.
No, and what the nation state of Israel, what God wants them to do. Is turn to him instead of turning to their weapons or turning to their allies, turn to him and say, please help us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I suspect that there are many living in Israel and Jews throughout the world who do pray. I just think that the leaders need to do that.
Yeah. Amen to that. Yeah, pray for the situation in the Middle East. I mean, what will happen according to the Lord's timeline and, in accordance with his purposes. It doesn't mean it's going to be a fun ride out there.
No.
And while we record this, Debka in Israel is reporting that the USS John C. Stennis, which is the helicopter carrier, has left San Diego, headed for the Persian Gulf 4 months earlier than expected. It just returned from its latest deployment in February.
Yeah, I do remember that. It just got back.
It was not scheduled to get out, to head back out until the end of the year, but it's back at sea 4 months ahead of schedule, probably due to the ongoing tensions with Iran.
Probably. So. Well, in the meantime, on another front, in Jackson Hole, Wyoming,
Oh, yeah.
Ben Bernanke is not making any friends.
I've not read on this, so I'll have to leave this one to you.
Well, I'm just kind of looking at a growing fear for Fed independence. It's not the kind of headline I want to see.
Fear for Fed independence?
Yeah.
Or fear of?
Fear for is what the headline says. U.S. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke news conference at the Federal Reserve in Washington. Let's see. Oh, sorry, that's the picture. Never mind that. Increasing political encroachment on the Federal Reserve, particularly from the Republican Party, could threaten the central bank's... It makes it sound like they're part of the government, but they're not.
Yeah.
The central bank's hard-won independence...
And undermine confidence.
They have never been hard won independence. They're a private bank, for goodness sake. How could they not be independent? Oh, good. And undermine confidence in the nearly 100-year-old institution. Reuters, good heavens, do your homework. How can you write their hard won independence?
I think they mean, you know, political independence. Since they are appointed by, Bernanke was appointed by President Bush and he was kept on. So, you know, it's not that.
That was the pervasive sentiment among economists gathered at the Fed's annual monetary policy symposium in Jackson Hole, Wyoming.
Yeah.
Against the dramatic backdrop of the Grand Teton Mountains, many said a closely contested presidential race has turned the monetary authority into a political football. There have been many, many on both sides of the aisle lately who are calling for an audit of the Fed.
Right. Ron Paul sort of led the charge.
Is this what they're afraid of?
Well, that's what it says.
But we're independent. If you audit us, then we're not independent. Yeah, well, they were never dependent.
Reuters says the Fed is already subject to regular audits, but Congressman Ron Paul's bill would remove an exemption for monetary policy deliberations. The Fed, when it was doling out all of the TARP money, was not telling United States Congress or the United States taxpayer where that money was going. And as it turned out later, after some news organizations basically fought a legal battle to get access to some of the information, it was discovered that a lot of the banks who were getting money from the Federal Reserve were foreign banks.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
This comes at a time when the LIBOR scandal is taking place over in the UK, and many, many banks have been lying.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And word that came out this past week that the MF Global scandal, in which, $1.5 billion of customer money was commingled with... This is the organization that was headed up by John Corzine, the former governor of New Jersey, former United States Senate Democrat. And a word came out that the Department of Justice was probably not going to file any charges in that scandal. And, you know, there are those who write about economic matters who, over the last week or so, basically have said this means banks now have carte blanche to steal your money. The fact that MF Global is about to skate after making off with $1.5 billion in funds that are supposed to be segregated from the operating funds used by the investment bank, if I understand this correctly. And the fact that they can do this and walk away without anybody serving any jail time means that any funds that you deposit in a bank, now there's legal precedent that the banks can just say, oops, sorry, we had lax accounting controls. We're really sorry. We're sick about it. And get away with it.
I love this article at the marketoracle.co.uk, the MF Global Magical Mystery Tour. And there's a great photo of John Corzine, and they put a little talk bubble. I simply do not know where the money is. Honest. It's a great photo. Mm-hmm. And he's got all of these gold rings and a Rolex watch.
Yeah. There's a piece at the San Francisco Chronicle that ran a couple of weeks ago about the bank scandals, and the headline is "Bank Scandals."
I just showed it to him.
Yeah, the bling. The only thing they don't have is like gold teeth.
He needs a grill.
Yeah. The headline of this op-ed piece is "Bank Scandals: Somebody Must Go to Jail." And they go through a number of recent examples: HSBC. Wall Street Bank, a Senate panel said HSBC Mexico shipped $7 billion in cash to its parent bank in 2007 and 8, money that could only have come from the illegal drug trade. The comptroller of the currency fined the bank for repeated violations of money laundering controls, but nobody went to jail. Barclays Bank, this is the LIBOR scandal that Sharon was talking about. The banking giant admitted it put together one of the biggest financial frauds in history by rigging interest rates on trillions of dollars of mortgages, loans, and investments. And its recently stated defense is that all the major banks do it.
Oh.
We all do it. Bank of America. Bank of America has admitted to the Department of Justice that it defrauded schools, hospitals, and state and local government entities by engaging in bid rigging activities involving proceeds from municipal bond sales. It has been fined for so many banking violations in recent years, one cannot keep track of them all. Citigroup has agreed to pay more than $3 billion in fines and legal settlements for its role in financing the fraud at Enron. Goldman Sachs in 2010 agreed to pay $550 million in fines regarding SEC allegations that bank and employees misled investors and omitted key disclosures and documents related to the sale of debt
instruments. But if all they're paying is $500,000,
it's just a cost of doing business.
Yeah, exactly.
You might, yeah. I mean, it's nothing more than like the gasoline we have to put in the trucks to deliver the product.
Yeah.
You know, that's just another expense. A J.P. Morgan Chase fined millions of dollars for
it's like the buzzing of flies to Vigo. Yeah.
For giving investors fake research on the sale of stocks and bonds, and also it was part of the Enron mess. Morgan Stanley improperly used customers' accounts as collateral for management loans. Wells Fargo failure to monitor money laundering and narcotics trafficking. And the question is, where are the prosecutions? And, the Democrats who accused Republicans of being in the pockets of the big bankers should note that financial fraud prosecutions by President Obama's Department of Justice are at a 20-year low.
Hello.
Yeah. So both parties are bought and paid for by the banks. And the big question we face on November 6th then here in the United States is, do we want the guy paid for by Goldman Sachs, which would be Barack Obama, or the guy paid for by Bain Capital?
Well, I choose the Fed because they're independent.
Yeah. Let's see.
I just think that's
Bernanke
funny.
Makes how many in a row that gone to the Fed from Goldman Sachs? Oh, well, no, it's a Treasury Secretary. I'm sorry. It's the Treasury Secretaries that have been Goldman Sachs.
Yeah.
Else? Speaking of money, this is a really distressing story out of Colorado, where a month ago we had the shooting there.
In Aurora.
Yeah, Aurora, mm-hmm, Colorado. Yeah. And a relief fund was launched to raise money for the victims and families of the victims.
Which sounds like a great idea.
Right. There is a story out this week that on Tuesday at a news conference, a spokesman for a group representing family members of those who were killed and wounded criticized the fundraisers for not giving the victims any say in how the $5 million, it's up to $5.13 million, last I checked, how the $5 million in donations will be distributed. The Community First Foundation has raised over $5 million since the shooting in late July. About $100,000 was given to 10 nonprofit organizations in Aurora on July 26th, so mm-hmm. about $10,000 apiece, mostly mental health organizations mm-hmm. in the community. Then, after victims' families complained, on August 17th, they handed out another $350,000 to the Colorado Organization for Victim Assistance. And this...
Wait a minute. What, this money was raised for the victims' families,
right,
and for the victims, right? For them, mm-hmm. not using them.
Well, I think you have hit on it and accurately described what's going on, because the money was raised using the images and the stories,
yes,
of those who were affected in the tragic mm-hmm. shooting in the movie theater. But the Colorado Organization for Victim Assistance disbursed $5,000 each to the families of the dozen killed and 57 injured. So essentially what it comes down to is this. The Community First Foundation in Aurora has raised $5 million, more than $5 million. They've handed out 10% of that. The other 90%, they're still hanging on to. $4.5 million still in their coffers, apparently. And when you look at their summary of money that's been raised and money that's been dispersed,
mm-hmm.
They very kindly include a line that says, fees for, processing and...
Are we at an hour?
Just about, yeah.
Sam's heading for the door.
We just clicked over 59 minutes, and Sam was like, okay, you're at 1 hour, people. The summary of the disbursements that they've got there, they very kindly note that they have waived their processing fees.
Oh.
Yeah, well, so it's because they're so generous. So
I will leave you with this thought. Here's a question. Are automobiles ever mentioned in the Bible? Are automobiles ever mentioned in the Bible?
Pastor used this as a children's sermon this morning.
And the answer is yes. Second chapter of Acts, verse 1. When the day of Pentecost came, they were all together and they were in one accord.
So sort of an apostolic clown car.
I know. That was a big car. Or they were very small back then.
Yeah. Well, the kids didn't get the joke, but the adults all thought it was pretty funny. So, well, yeah, we're sorry to leave you. And
Sam says, look, you should have just cut it off before she ever started the joke. Yeah. I told you, 59-minute warning.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not responsible. A view from the bunker this week. We'll talk about the nature of the angelic realm. Angels, fallen angels, and demons. Paradox Brown, who's written a couple of books, which are available for free online.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be, that is a good show.
And next Sunday, which would be, September the 9th? Yeah, mm-hmm. September the 9th. Doug Hamp. It's been far too long. Met him at the Future Congress in Branson last summer, and meant to interview him in the time after that. And we sent a few emails back and forth. Schedules never, you know, clicked. And suddenly, next thing we knew, we were at the Prophecy Summit in Branson. It's like, why haven't we talked yet?
And I'm glad you brought that up, because I want to make sure everybody bookmarks futurecongress.com, because the Future Congress 2 has been scheduled for Dallas, Texas, January 4th through the 6th. Sam says if they're going to a second hour, I'm getting in the binky.
Yeah, he's diving back under the it's a dachshund thing. They love to burrow. It's
I know
weird.
They do.
Anyway, so, yeah, we're looking forward to that, and we'll be telling you more about that as plans develop, and we're praying and hoping that we can be a part of this. We just need to figure out some logistics.
Yeah. But well, pray for that. And if we're supposed to be there, then just pray that the Lord will work it out. And if we're not supposed to be there, have him slap us up the side of the head and say, stop it.
The board upside the head. That's often what it takes to get my attention. So, well, we just pray for the situation in the Middle East. Pray for those who are suffering from the flooding, the after effects of Hurricane Isaac along the Louisiana Gulf Coast. And as always, we appreciate your prayers and support. Until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out.